Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Wait. Stop the music. Here is the world according to Obama. The world is upside down, where war is peace, warming is cooling, bankruptcy is solvency, and weakness is strength. Welcome back to the world of reality, the world of the Savage Nation. It's great to be back here. I was out all of last week owing to dental surgery that went awry. I'm sure many of you can appreciate what that's like. And I don't want to go into it because it's kind of self-serving and boring, but I had to have a bone graft and a this and a that, and I have a feeling that they put bone tissue in from a dead communist from Moscow, and that my bone system has been fighting with this bone from this dead communist in order to make it, you know, salute and do the right thing. I also want to tell you, I saw one of the worst movies of my life, which I give not only a thumbs down. It's one of the worst films ever made in American history. It's called Public Enemies, with Johnny Depp, who is possibly one of the worst actors ever to hit the American screen, at least in his current format. He should stick to Pirates of whatever. And Christian Bale, who should be ashamed of himself, and a woman I never heard of named Marion Cotillard, who really belongs in a coat check room somewhere in West Palm Beach. Michael Mann, I don't know who he is. I think he used to do Miami Vice, if I'm not mistaken. Am I correct, Beowulf? A piece of garbage. Now, not only was the movie impossible to understand, but it glorified one of the worst white trash murderers in history named Dillinger. Why they would spend so much money to glorify a murderer is not beyond me. I understand the sick mind of liberals in Hollywood. Believe me, don't get me wrong. I'm aware of the mental illness called liberalism. Well, but when you see so much talent devoted to making a movie about a murderer, a cold-blooded bank robber murderer, a white trasher of the lowest order, and you say to yourself, this guy Michael Mann, whoever he is, the TV director who became a movie director, whatever, the guy has some, obviously, talent, or he wouldn't be in the movie business. What if he had done a movie about James Doolittle? What if he had done a movie about an American war hero? What if he had done a movie about General MacArthur? What if he had done a movie about somebody with the guts to kill the enemy, but for the sake of protecting the country, instead of some white trash bank robber who just beats up cops and kills them? The worst movie I've ever seen, glorifying scum, Public Enemies. Don't buy it. Don't buy the DVD. Next headline, for those of you who believe in global warming caused by men, Canada is freezing. Canada freezes as snowstorm strands thousands. People in the north central part of the Canadian province of Ontario are digging out after one of the worst snowstorms on record. In fact, up to 100 centimeters of snow fell over 3 days north of Toronto. More than 100,000 people hit by the storm. Police urging travelers to stay away from the region. Meanwhile, Western Canada, Al Gore, is in the grip of a cold snap with temperatures plummeting anywhere from 40 to 50 degrees negative on the Celsius scale. That's minus 50 degrees Celsius, while our lunatic, immature President Obama goes to Copenhagen to try to ensnare us in the greatest global con in history on climate gate. Those of you who are worried about tap water, you may not know the whole story, but I'll give you the whole story. Miami Hotel moves 300 guests due to waterborne bacteria. 300 guests got a bacterial infection related to Legionnaire's disease. And it turns out I found out why. Problem at the Epic Hotel was the bacteria Legionella pneumophila, which causes Legionnaire's disease. New hotel opened a year ago. What happened? You see, hotels like this specialize in everything green and everything pure and everything good and everything great for the special guests who come to these hotels. And as you well know, tap water is passé. They only drink bottled water. And so they put in a powerful water filter at the hotel, which would remove chlorine and other toxins from the tap water. Well, they did remove the chlorine from the tap water with the powerful filter, and that allowed the negative bacteria to grow in the water system in this Miami hotel. One European guest died. Two others were treated in hospital in November and December. And so, ladies and gentlemen, let me explain to you. Well, I'll explain a lot to you. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. War is peace. Warming is cooling. Bankruptcy is solvency, and weakness is strength, all according to liberals. And again, going back to the worst movie I've seen in recent times, Public Enemies, I got to tell you something. You say, well, okay, why are you talking about it? Because I want you to understand that as a movie lover, I know the difference between grade A, grade B, grade C, grade D, and absolute unadulterated merde, as they say in France. This was trash of the lowest order. I couldn't stop watching Public Enemies because it was so bad, and I didn't know if it would get worse, and it did. And then it went on and on and on, and I said, this can't be. First of all, I couldn't understand half of what they were saying. I thought it needed a set of subscripts under it. I couldn't understand. They were garbled. The language was garbled. It was shot by video camera, and it sounded like an amateur movie. Anyway, here's a question of the day, if you want one, which is this. Who could they have glorified who was a violent man from the 1930s, let's say, or the 40s, a violent man who was violent for the sake of the public good? You see, let me explain something to you. There's a lot of violent men out there. Some of them are real evil. They're the bad guys, and they go to jail or they get killed by the cops. Then there are the violent men who are not afraid to kill, who are on the side of good. They're the cops and the actual combat soldiers. In other words, they say they have the same capacity to murder as the bad guys, only they murder for good rather than murdering for illness, evil. You all get the difference? You know, who do you think could stand up to the most evil people on earth? They have to have the same capacity to stand toe-to-toe with them and murder them. You understand that? And without, that's where you'd be. There was a group of five Muslims, youth, that is, who attended a mosque in Virginia, got radicalized by their wonderful imam, no doubt. They were arrested in Pakistan, and then there was a press conference that was astonishing because of its lack of alacrity. Look it up. A guy named Mahdi Bray, president of the so-called Muslim American Society Freedom Foundation, you know what that is. You know, there was once a bund in the United States of America, who had the nerve to say this is a wake-up call for all youth, Muslims, Christians, or Jews. Now, remember, it was only Muslim youth who became radicalized and went to Pakistan to kill Americans. But he says it's Muslims, Christians, or Jews. Listen to clip 16 if you want to believe double speak.
This is indeed a wake-up call. It's a wake-up call involving our youth. All youth. Be they Muslims, Christians, Jews, all youth.
You lie. Hey, shut up. Wait a minute. Stop. You know, I am outraged by this. It's not all youth, Mahdi Bray. It's Muslim youth. Stop lying. Stop lying, Mahdi Bray. It's not all youth. It's Muslim youth who went to Pakistan to kill. It was not Christian youth. It was not Jewish youth. Where's the outrage over this? Where is the outrage over this? Now, wait, it gets even... Well, I don't want to play anymore right now. What I want to do is give out my phone number, 1-800-449-8255. It is unbelievable what's going on in the world. The week I was out, I mean, I tried to tune out of the news because I had stitches in my mouth, which I still do. can still feel the bone. As I don't know. They did a bone transplant. I had an upper tooth. It was an early injury when I was a kid. And finally, they had to remove the tooth. So you remove the tooth and put in a pin made of titanium. Well, oh, wait a minute. That's right. I meant to tell you the story. Before I left you, it was on a Friday. I told you I was meeting an individual. He or she would likely be the next president of the United States. That's right. That's right. That's where the serial, The Savage Nation, ended. Well, I went to that dinner up in North Beach, in the North Beach restaurant in San Francisco. And I had dinner with the individual who was likely to be the next president of the United States. It was just the two of us, by the way. It was not four, not ten. I was not one of many. And I became very interested in the discussion, which I swore to not talk about, and I'm not going to mention the individual. But I went home, and as I said to you, I had a titanium pin in my mouth with a tooth over it. It was supposed to take a few months to get solidified. I come home, and I start to explain to Mrs. S. the dinner. I got excited. I didn't look. There was a piece of French bread in the bread box. I'm a big bread eater. And my housekeeper inadvertently bought a piece of sourdough, a new sourdough loaf. I hate sourdough. I can't stand it. I'm not a miner. I don't wear dungarees, and I don't eat sourdough. I like French bread. I don't like sourdough. I can't stand the taste of it. But I didn't look. I put tuna on it, and I'm talking, telling the story. I bite into the thing, and all of a sudden, I hear a snap in my mouth. All right, I'll be right back.
Savage.
All right, so we're having a conversation here on the Savage Nation. At least I'm having a monologue with myself. The world, according to Obama, war is peace, warming is cooling, bankruptcy is solvency, weakness is strength. I'm also explaining why I was gone for a week. Probably it's the longest I've been off the air in years. I never take a week. And it was not a holiday. It was, you know, medical, the surgical stuff. So anyway, I broke the tooth that night after the meeting with the presidential candidate. Snap. See the dentist the next day. He says, you broke it off. Come in Monday. The next thing I know, he removes the titanium pin. I know it's like the old man on the bench already with my operation. I'm sorry, but let me finish it because I'm in broadcasting. It's a horrible nightmare to have a missing front tooth, let me tell you, because your speech is screwed up. You don't hear it now because, okay, it's fixed temporarily. Takes the pin out. The next thing I know, he's putting a bone transplant in my head, you know, when he didn't have to do it before, and collagen over the bone and stitches over that and a tooth over that. So I said, wait a minute. After it's all over, I said, you didn't give me a choice here. I said, I don't want cadaver bone in my head because I don't know the cadaver. I mean, who is it? He says to me, well, it's sterilized. I said, yeah, right. If you check it out, we don't know how much DNA is inactivated. So what if I got a communist, alcoholic, junkie, degenerate's bone in my head? And it's fighting now with my skeletal system of who's going to win. In other words, I could wind up on the air in 2 weeks being the cadaver and his personality instead of me. What if it takes over and I become a liberal? That's what I'm afraid of. In other words, I could win because there's more of my bone than his. It's only an inch long where the tooth was put in. But there's a fight going on. It has to be mated. You know what I'm saying? It's amazing what's going on in the human body. I didn't want it, but it's in there. That's all. So here I had to take the week off. So I'm back. Now I come back to the worst winter in history, in modern history, and Schmendrick is going to Copenhagen to sell our rights away. Then I watched the worst movie of my life, Public Enemies, and I ask, why do they glorify such scum? Why do they glorify a cop-killing, bank-robbing, white trash scum like John Dillinger? Why do they do that? And I look at it, I'm watching the movie, and I'm saying to the people sitting with me in my living room here, look at this. If you were an 11-year-old kid, look at this. Look what they're making into a hero, this piece of garbage, this cop-killing piece of garbage. Look who they're glorifying, the scum of the earth in Hollywood. With all their genius, look what they do with it. Look how they pervert their genius. They could have shown an American World War II ace who went up against Japanese Zeros in a Corsair, or an American naval hero who went up against a Japanese battleship and a destroyer. Instead, they show this garbage, this filth. And that's the exact problem with America. And it just shows you what happens when Hollywood goes wrong. You know, why does this country glorify such garbage, I ask myself. Well, let me be positive. Because it is said that he who brings a candle into the darkness, you know, that one, you heard that one, didn't you? You ever go out into a dark hall and light one candle and see the amount of light one candle brings? Well, that's what religion is. Except for some people who have brought darkness through religion because they've hijacked religion the same way Obama has hijacked America. In other words, Obama has hijacked. You're telling me there's global warming caused by man? You're that stupid? You're that idiotic? You buy into that garbage? The coldest winter on record? It's darkness. He's projecting darkness instead of light. He's projecting lies instead of truth. He's projecting a sort of hate instead of love. So I want to talk about the positive. This week is a very special week for Jewish people, of whom there are only a few million in the whole world. Very small minority amongst minorities. Hated by most. Loved primarily by fundamentalist Christians. This is the strangest paradox on earth. The fundamentalist Christian is the Jew's best friend. And I'll let it hang in the air for the moment. So let me just tell you this. Hanukkah has a history to it. The ancient temple in Jerusalem was invaded by the Syrians. The Syrians sacked the temple. They destroyed the temple. They burned the temple. They broke all of the holy objects. When the religious Jews went back into their wrecked temple, sacked by the Syrians, they found some holy oil. And holy oil was only supposed to last for a few nights, maybe one night. They said there's only one night's worth of holy oil left. And they lit it, and it lasted for all the nights that we now have for Hanukkah, however number of candles there are in the menorah. You light one every night. And what is the metaphor of this story? That no matter how broken down you are, no matter how wrecked you are, no matter how wrecked your life is, no matter how hopeless you think you are, no matter where you are as a shipwreck and you can't go on, somewhere within you there is some holy oil. And if you can only light that oil, you'll be relit. Your whole life will relight. Find the holy oil within and light it through the spark of God.
Savage.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me. My lover stands.
It is the one and only Savage Nation. Thanks for waiting for my return. I appreciate it very much. You are, in many ways, a big part of my life. Radio is a big part of my life. And here we are. Here we are. Public enemies and all. I wish we had an FBI today that would go after the really bad guys the same way the FBI was constructed to go after guys like Dillinger, to shoot them, kill them, or kill them. Instead, we have an FBI, we have a CIA, we have a Marine Corps on the rules of engagement that virtually assures the enemy will win. It's astounding to me what's happened to this country. And as I said before, and I'll repeat it now because it was finally published in a newspaper, in the Springfield, Missouri Newsleader by Bob Monday. He wrote a few nights ago, I was listening to one of my heroes, Michael Savage, on Fox Radio Network. Michael Savage is a world-renowned radio commentator who has five earned, I don't have five earned doctorate degrees, but I have an earned doctorate degree and two earned master's degrees. And Savage said he was telling about the pitiful shape the USA is in now. He stated, quote, "I believe an evangelical Christianity mass movement is the only thing that can save the United States of America." He said, "Having traveled mostly in gospel music, for over 40 years in the United States of America, I would totally agree with Michael Savage." I agree with him. I didn't say it for fun. I didn't say it to appeal to my audience. I said it because I believe it. I believe every word of that. The only thing that can save this country is an evangelical Christian mass movement. It's the only thing that can save this country. As Dr. W.E. Dowell, one of the founders of the Baptist Bible Fellowship, said, what we need is an old-fashioned heaven-sent Pentecostal fire revival. There are many things. We are at a crossroads. And whether this country lives or dies is up to you. I got chills up and down my spine as I said that. But take a look at the atheists running this country now. Take a look at the evil that pervades Hollywood. Take a look at the sewer pipe that runs out of the newspapers. You pick up a newspaper, everything that is good is reviled. Everything that is evil is worshipped. You look at the most distorted minds of our generation, they're working in Hollywood. And what do? They glorify the sickest, most evil people on earth. Take a look at womanhood. Take a look at it. Do you have to look any further than what happened to Tiger Woods? Tiger Woods is an example of what happens to people. He's not the only one who did that or does it or will do it or has done it. I understand that. But take a look at who's glorified amongst womanhood. Is it the married mother of one or more children? Or is it the sad sack single mother on government handout? Tell me who they glorify on daytime television. Is it the sanctified, beautiful, married mother who sacrifices all for her family? Or is it a sack of protoplasm that is dependent upon Uncle Sam? Just turn your television on, you'll see what they're glorifying. Wherever you turn, criminals and other miscreants are glorified by our society. There are many other people that can be glorified. And the audiences, by the way, would flock to movies about real heroes. I can name five people that could have been glorified instead of this bank-robbing, cop-killing bum, Dillinger, who's a nothing on the radar scope of American history. He's nothing. A blip. A garbage can. Garbage can. Pure white trash who stood for nothing but bad. I mean, there were guys like him with the guts and the guile that he, like him, who flew planes in World War II, commanded tanks, commanded ships, commanded men. Why are they not glorified? They have names. There are explorers who conquered the farthest reaches of Earth. Robert Byrd, Arctic explorer. Rasmussen, Arctic explorer. Doctors who have saved millions of lives, who had epic struggles to overcome an establishment that mocked them, wouldn't fund them. Real scientists as opposed to the phony kind that Obama and Al Gore specialize in, never glorified. When I was a kid, I went to a movie. I'd come out glowing over a movie about Louis Pasteur, or if you're a woman, Madame Curie. These were heroes. Heroes that children could look up to and would want to be like. There was a TV show called Ben Casey, M.D. Many of you listening to this show are doctors. You probably grew up watching shows like Ben Casey, M.D., and you wanted to be like Ben Casey. He didn't smile a lot. He looks like he's sweaty. He always needed a shave. He had a serious hangdog look about him. His eyes were full of concern. You wanted to be a doctor because of him. That's what you call about teaching role models, creating role models for children. Instead, they go to a movie where every picture shows somebody with a gun. Every picture, a real man. A real man blows another man's head off. You hear this and you wonder why you have inner-city morons shooting each other. You wonder where they got it from. They got it from the geniuses in Hollywood. Where do you think they got it from? They got it from the geniuses in Hollywood. That if you're a man, you have a gun and you shoot somebody for no reason. Anyway, I don't want to get too excited because I got the bone to deal with. The cadaver bone, as I say. It could be a communist bone in my mouth, and I want to make sure I win, not him. I mean that. I really don't want this thing to go crazy on me and go viral. What if this thing wins? What if I wake up one day, it's like Frankenstein, and I become the bone, the bone, the bone, the bone takes over. It's the... I really would have chosen plastic if I had the choice. You know, paper or plastic. I would have said, you know, a bone or plastic. I'll take the plastic version. I didn't get the choice. It was in the mouth already. He injected me, and there was the bone. I never would have taken it. And then I loved it. They put the collagen over it. They sewed over it. That's nice every time the tongue hits it. I don't have any speech defects as a result, but believe me, I know any second. And the dentist says to me, guarantee the tooth I put in is going to fall out. Then I go to a specialist last week to make sure the first guy did the right thing. He said, he did a great job, but I can guarantee you the tooth that's in there is going to fall out. So every bite I take now, I have to eat on the left side of my mouth. I'm not enjoying myself. I can't eat anymore. One of my greatest pleasures was eating. Thank God it didn't affect my greatest pleasure. You know, you have to add up what could happen to you. This is nothing compared to what could happen to you. A guy goes to war, he comes back without a, you know what, out of face, a hand, an arm. And they give him a reward. They give him a reward for following Obama's rules of engagement. So I'm eating the worst food in the world. I am eating such garbage. Here's a guy who's been on a low cholesterol, great diet all his life. That's why I'm still alive. I wrote the books on it in the 70s. I am eating such garbage. You've never seen anything like it. Under the guise that I can't eat very much, I have to eat what I like. I had a sausage hero today. I almost cried to taste it so good. I'm out of my normal community. I'm not going to say where I am. I went to a Greasy Spoon pizzeria. I went over to West Marine to buy something for my boat. It's something I enjoy. I bought mats, and I bought a cup. I don't know what, a screwdriver. Guys do these things. They hang around boating stores. The way kids hang around toy stores, older guys hang around boating stores. I come out, and I see a guy, a poor guy, walking with a little pizza box. So I said, oh, I'm in business. Where's there a pizzeria in this strip mall? Leave it to me. I take a walk, and there's a little hole-in-the-wall hovel of a pizzeria, something you might see in East Jerusalem. Horrible. But the food smelled so good, I almost died. I go in. There's two guys working, and both of them look like they had trouble with the law. All right, so this is what they do. And they were nice guys. One looked like witness protection. The other one had tattoos that looked like gang markings. But they knew how to make, you know, a sausage hero. You know, I know a witness protection guy's not a cook. They learned it on the radiator with the, and so I said, all right, give me the sausage hero. And I said to myself, a hero again? You snapped a tooth with a hero. What are you doing? I get a sausage hero, one of those heroes that while he's making it, you want to start clawing the walls. I get it home, I rip open the foil, and I go at it, but I say, all right, so it was so good, I'm telling you, poison. And last night I ate meatballs. It's like I'm apologizing in a confessional. Last night I had an Italian restaurant, meatballs, just like old-fashioned meatballs, not like the Swedish meatballs of the socialist society we've become, little nasty meatballs. When America was great, as I said to you, the meatballs were large, fluffy, and tasty in the 50s. Now that we've become a socialist nation, I said this 5 years ago, we have nasty little meatballs, Swedish meatballs, because like socialist meatballs, no flavor, nothing in them. It's like a gristle meatball. But I went to a chain Italian restaurant down here the other day. I happen to love the place. I love cheap restaurants. I don't like fancy restaurants. I don't. If it has a white tablecloth, I'm leery of it. Give me formica, then I'm at home. Anyway, I'm about an hour and a half away from a vodka, so you have to forgive me. It's the first show, you know. I've done this before. You know, in the early days of radio what I did? I got to tell you something funny. 15 years ago when I began, I was on a local station. So I had another career, and I had to trade off what I was going to do, which career I was going to follow. I knew I was a natural. It's like a guy, you know, finds something at a certain age, and he's so good at it. That offers come flying at him, but I was a natural from the beginning. But I didn't know if I wanted to do it. I would work for 5 weeks and take a week off every 5 weeks like clockwork. I took a whole week off. I had to go do my other, you know, consulting thing. I had to travel. And you know what? My audience waited for me for that week. My ratings went through the roof. People don't go away. You could be off the air for a couple of months if you have a following and people will find you again. If they love you, they love you. They're not going to forget you overnight. And I haven't taken a week off that I can remember in years. I don't do it anymore. But truthfully, it's a great way to run a show because it refreshes you. But having said that, it's the first night back after being off for like a whole week and, you know, the weekends, and it's demanding. I don't know how I'm doing. How's my driving? Dial 1-800-TALK. How's my driving? I love those truck signs. You know, he's great. Anyway, we could talk about anything you want here. Repent now or reap God's wrath. Here's another little headline for you. New study. More Democrats than Republicans believe in ghosts, talk with the dead, and fortune tellers. A new study by the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life, Pew, reveals a startling difference between Republicans and Dems on issues of spirituality and supernatural phenomenon. The study, many Americans mix multiple faiths, report that a significant number of Americans practice a mixture of religious beliefs, and, quote, many blend Christianity with Eastern and New Age beliefs such as reincarnation, astrology, and the presence of spiritual energy in physical objects. That's mainly the girl junkies from Hollywood. They're all vegetarians, deficient in all B vitamins, deficient in iron. They're starving to death. They're skinny. At night, they're the skankiest degenerates you've ever seen. But in the morning, they're vegetarian and they're meditating on a prayer rug. That's not in the article. And so it turns out that conservatives and Republicans report fewer experiences than liberals or Dems communicating with the dead, seeing ghosts, consulting fortune tellers or psychics. You hear this? 21% of Republicans report that they have been in touch with someone who is dead, while 36% of Democrats say they have done so. That's because most of them are dead. They're the walking dead. Of course Democrats feel they've been in touch with the dead. They are the dead. They're the living dead. 11% of Republicans say they have seen a ghost, and 21% of Democrats say so. This is stupid. 17% of Republicans say they believe in reincarnation, while 30% of Democrats believe in reincarnation. Yeah, well, what is Obama reincarnation of? Hannibal? There are some areas in which the two partisan groups are similar. When Pew asked respondents whether they have had a religious or mystical experience, 50% of Repubes said yes, as did 50% of Democrats. What's a religious experience? I don't know what that means. What is a religious experience? I'm not Jimmy Carter. I don't wave a snake and drink, you know, whatever, strychnine, see the Lord on the couch in a white shroud. What are you, nuts? God don't want to be seen, man. He's invisible. If you could see God, the whole mystique is gone. You're not supposed to see God. He's supposed to see you. I never like... See, this is the problem with a lot of people. They said, I prayed, nothing happened. You're not praying for you. Your job is to worship God. It's not for God to come down and say, good boy, I'm going to give you that whatever you want. You see, you don't understand. People once said to a spiritual guy I knew that... if I prayed, how come nothing happened? Why didn't God answer my prayers? And this advanced spiritual guy says, God's not supposed to answer your prayers. You're praying to God, meaning you're bowing down to God. You're worshiping God. Don't you understand what that means? See, we are so egotistical that we think that the minute we pray already, thunder and lightning should happen, and immediately you should find a job, you should find a wife, and your dog should grow his hair back. It's not going to happen that way. First, you have to get on your hands and knees and say to God, I'm sorry for all I have done because I'm evil and no good. You got to understand you're a no good, Nick. You're a basically, you're a bug with a human soul. There's billions of us walking around. You have to humble yourself. Humble comes from the root word humus. Humus comes from earth. You come from the earth and you return to the earth, no matter how big your ego may be. You hear? No matter how big that ego may be, my friend. No matter how big that ego may be, you come from the earth and you return to the earth. So remember that. It might help you. It might help you. It might help you not give the finger to someone who cuts you off. Or whatever, right? I'm not here to give you a sermon. It could be the bone in my mouth talking. I don't know. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I saw the harbor.
It is the Savage Nation Live with Michael here, talking about this and that. News, views, and reviews. That's a caption I created back in the 90s. News, views, and reviews. Movie reviews, news, my views, whatever it may be. That's what talk radio is supposed to be. You get stuck on this political bent. You can drive the audience crazy. They want to hear it up to a point. And believe me, there's a lot to talk about having an overt Marxist in the White House. Oh, a laugh line, huh? He's a Marxist, sure. If it walks like a Marxist, if it talks like a Marxist, it is a Marxist. Schmendrick. Writing blank checks. You talk about a bank robber, Dillinger. He was petty ante compared to Obama and Pelosi. These guys are writing themselves checks for whatever they want. She flies in a 767 and you're not supposed to notice. How do they differ from a bank robber? Explain to me how they differ from a bank robber. They're different than a bank robber. They're bankrupting the country. You know, King Ludwig II of Bavaria is the model that I use for Obama, in the sense that the man has no concept of what a dollar is, because he never worked for a living. He was always a community organizer, a college teacher, never met a payroll. Now he's running the country. So to him, you need money, write checks, make up, print the money. So they printed another $2 trillion in a budget or whatever. So the value of your dollar went down about 10% overnight. You hear? And the idiots in the media don't even say a word. Nothing. All I can do is say it like it is, call them like I see them, and let the chips fall where they may. The chips fall where they may. That's all. Some love it. Some don't love it. Some hate it. Some are too stupid to even understand it. You know, I got to tell you something. A lot of things I want to say all at once because I have a lot to say, being pent up all week with the Novocaine. You want to hear a really good high, which is Novocaine and then vodka. When the minute I left the dentist, I'll tell you, the minute I left the dentist, I went to a local restaurant, and I really had two or three drinks. It's a really wonderful combo. It's not to be ignored. I had someone driving for me. Don't worry about it. Don't already report. Nice feeling. Everyone looks friendly. You go, I'll buy him a drink. I buy people drinks. I throw money around. I throw tips around. I'm a nice guy. Amigo this, amigo that, Carlos this, Carlos that. They're nice people. They like me. I think they'd like me even if I didn't tip them. They can tell. So what do you want to talk about? What do you want to talk about? Chicago, Eric, quickly, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, appreciate taking my call. I just want to mention about the meatballs. God bless my father's soul, but you remind me every day of him. Every day I'll drive home and just thanks for the great feelings and, about the meatballs. It's amazing because my father always talked about how meatballs over the years have changed.
Right. In the 50s, they were small. They were big, fluffy, and delicious. And then as we become a socialist nation, they became like Swedish meatballs, small and nasty and tasteless.
Boy, they just got different over
like
the years.
Like Tiger's wife.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language. Adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Thanks, Phil. Savage Nation. Monday edition. Back after a hiatus. Not a hiatus or hernia, but hiatus. A dental hiatus. In the arms of Morpheus for a week. Well, now I'm back in the arms of the Savage Nation. The world, according to Obama, where war is peace, cooling is warming, bankruptcy is solvency, and weakness is strength. That's the world we're living in. And where the scum of the earth is glorified by the sickest minds of our generation in Hollywood. The sewer pipe of Hollywood continues to pump out trash that rots the minds of our children. The worst movie I've seen in my adult life, Public Enemies, by Michael Mann, the TV director, starring Johnny Depp, the most overrated actor in history, in a movie that was so astonishingly horrible, I kept watching it to see if it could get worse, and it did. Couldn't understand half the dialogue because it was garbled. There was nothing there. Big deal. And who did they glorify? A bank robber and a cop killer. And if you're 11 years old and a moron, you sit, oh, he has a gun and makes him a tough guy. Oh, a tough man bangs another man over the head with a gun and shoots him. And you wonder why our children are screwed up. Thank you, Universal. Thank you very much. As you can hear, the black helicopters are in the background coming to get me because this kind of truth is so dangerous in America that only the 1-800-449-8255. We're also talking about religion, Hanukkah. I made a statement that has attracted some attention. where I made a quote that only a revival of evangelical Christianity can save America. I mean every word of that. Then maybe we'll get decent movies. Maybe we'll get newspapers we can read again. Maybe your grandmother could walk to the grocery store for a carton of milk without fear of being raped. Not that the police aren't there to protect her, but they're afraid to protect her for fear of the ACLU, where the bottom of the barrel, scum of the earth, dictate the rules of engagement for the police. Same thing with our battles in Iraq and Afghanistan. Rules written by psychotic lawyers who have never fired a Daisy BB gun. And you wonder why the war goes on forever in Afghanistan. These are the topics. You are the caller. Any one of them is worthy of a comment. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's begin in New York. Danny takes umbrage with my attack on Public Enemies. He thinks it's a great film. Danny, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Michael, it's great to have you back. You have, without question, the most riveting show on the air. I'm a filmmaker in New York, not a Hollywood filmmaker. And I thought the film was very well made. I just disagree with you on the glorification of Dillinger. I didn't find that it glorified him. I just think it showed him as a major force that existed at that time period that America was fascinated with and still is.
Well, let me say this. You're a filmmaker and I'm not. I'm just a guy who watches movies on television, okay? Movies are made for an audience, and I think you're being in the industry itself. You see a different movie than I do. And in other words, you see the technique. You see various things done that I don't even know were done. You know what I'm saying? But the overall movie per se is about a bum, number one. Let me put it to you this way. Let's take The Godfather. Admittedly, one of the great gangster epics of all time. Why was it so popular? Because Don Corleone was not just a murderer who ordered the death of men, but he was also shown to be a man who had saving graces. He was judicious in the kind of violence he would met out. Remember that? In other words, remember when they come to him at the wedding and he says, well, they did this to my daughter, did that, and he gets Clemenza, get a man we can trust, you know, beat him up but don't kill him. Remember that? In other words, he was like a tribal leader, an ancient biblical tribal leader in the sense, even though he was a gangster, it was a guy reluctantly driven into the gangster world. He was a grocer, lost his job. He had to do it to save the family. It's almost the same with The Sopranos, with the Tony Soprano. Although he's an all-around bad psychopath, the guy has some saving graces. Again, judicious sometimes with the use of violence. He could be kind to his family, even the guys who work for him. But there was nothing. There was no depth here with the character. If you want to just talk character, Danny, there was no depth. There was nothing. And as far as the girl goes, the lead, who is she? Why would they abuse this girl who was not even attractive, Marion Cotillard?
I disagree with you on that. I find her attractive. She won the Academy Award for playing a famous singer, Edith Piaf, in La Vie en Rose. And she.
I know Edith Piaf, but this girl doesn't do it for me. I don't understand it, by the way. But look, this is the whole point. It's art. Let's go back to the character himself. Why would Hollywood, with all this genius in Hollywood, they could have done a movie about so many great Americans who were violent, capable of taking on the enemy, bloodthirsty killers for the right reason rather than the wrong. Why doesn't Hollywood produce that anymore, Danny, do you think?
Well, I think you have a good point, but in the case of Dillinger, he is a fascinating character. He broke out of prison after 9 years and captivated a lot of the country at that time period of the Depression. And you did watch the film. That tells me that you were interested in the subject matter, were you not?
No. No. I like the genre of movies about such scenes. I like to see the depth portrayed if there's something more to the character other than bloodthirsty murder and killing, and I didn't see it. Moreover, I got to tell you, I couldn't even hear half the dialogue. It was garbled. What was that all about? And incidentally, somebody in the lighting department hates Johnny Depp because they showed his pockmarked face. Why would they show all of the man's physical flaws in a movie?
Well, I can't answer the sound question. Michael Mann is a director who's devoted to complete authenticity. So he chose to only give you the sound that was captured on the set rather than people who go in a booth and loop, you know, and put in their dialogue.
I couldn't hear it. I tried to hear it. I thought I needed subtitles throughout the half the movie. And then the contrived love story, as I said. But the face, the lighting on the face made their faces. They both had very bad skin and pockmarks. Why would he do that to them, Danny?
Well, I think he went out of his way not to give them the usual Hollywood makeup treatment so they looked like they were real people. that you could see with your own eyes.
Yeah, well, let me tell you something. I don't go to the movies to see real people. If I want to see real people, I go to a bad pizzeria. Thanks for the call. San Diego, Michael, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, I was just wondering why you think these evangelical Christians are going to save America. They want to control every aspect of our life, a sexual reproductive life. They want to start all the wars and police the world. And they want to have the death penalty. They want tougher crime statutes. And
Whoa. So far, I haven't heard anything that you said that I disagree with. They want to have tougher penalties, including the death penalty. Most Americans want tougher laws, and they're in favor of the death penalty. What do they stand for that threatens you, Michael?
Laws like we do.
Michael, what do evangelicals stand for? Which of the Ten Commandments do you disagree with? Let's start with that. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Which of those do you find offensive?
But let's stick with what the evangelicals want to do to America. What they want to do is they want to have a vision of America where they don't want us to have any reproductive rights. We can't.
Let's stop for a minute. What is a reproductive right? That's code word for something, isn't it?
A reproductive right? Well, it means that what they want is they want everybody to be married. We can't date. We can't have a lot of women in our lives. We can't have abortions.
So in other words, you believe in adultery and you believe in abortion.
Well,
you don't like the idea that people don't believe in abortion and adultery.
I want to be able to have any woman I can anytime I want. I'm single.
Mm-hmm. Well, you do, though. So where do they threaten you? You're a single guy. How does an evangelical threaten you? Where? Did he hang up? Yeah, I guess so. The minute I said to him, which of the Ten Commandments is it that you don't like, he lost it already. I heard he went for the depends. All right, that's all. 1-800-449-8255. I'm still driving on sausage right now. Houston, Jerome, welcome to the Savage Nation. You are on. I can't see the number. It's too dark in here. Jerome, welcome to the Savage Nation.
All right, your driving is better than ever, Michael.
Even though I have the commie bone in my jaw?
That's inconsequential. Your driving is better than ever. You're the Beethoven of the airwaves, as far as I'm concerned.
That's very nice of you. I was at a dinner the other night down where I'm visiting, and the woman said to me, how come you don't like Rush Limbaugh? So I said to her, do you know the difference between Mozart and Salieri? She said, no. I said, then I can't help you.
Well, my opinion differs a little bit. I mean, to me, Limbaugh is he's kind of like the Mozart, but you're definitely the Beethoven. I mean,
that's a different way to look at it. Yes, Limbaugh is a very good Republican drum beater. I agree with that, and we need them. We certainly need the one or two dimensional drum beaters in the orchestra. I agree with you on that. But let's not forget that Rush, for years, licked Bush's boots until he found out his audience was leaving him, and then he came out and said, I'm a Republican water carrier. Remember that?
Yes, I remember.
Oh, and all of a sudden, he shifted gears and became Mr. Critic. Now he's got, you know, a good free run because we have such a horrible human being in the White House. We all understand the danger we're in, and we have to draw our wagons. But I'll never forgive any of them, frankly, for not taking my case and protecting me when I needed it. When he was in trouble with drugs, I protected him. When O'Reilly got in trouble with the sexual thing and they bought off the women with the loofah, I took O'Reilly's side. And yet when I needed their help, none of them came to my aid. That tells you an awful lot about them, doesn't it, Jerome?
Yeah, I was just.
And I don't even want to go into this, but I don't forget people who say one thing and do another. But anyway, thank you for the positive. I'm trying to stay positive because if I get angry, I'll blow out the cadaver bone. How's my driving? How's my driving? Is it the bone talking or me? I don't know. The bone speaks. Maybe that should be the name of the show for this week. Only the bone knows. 1-800-449-8255. It's already 17 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. You're listening to the Teddy Bell Rock, created by sound impresario of the Savage Nation, Doug Lynn. Thank you, Teddy. Let me hear more of Teddy.
Just a jingle bell. Just a jingle bell. Just a jingle bell.
Doug, I don't know how you do it. Teddy's going to make enough residuals to support me in my old age. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Oh, yeah. Tax and spend used to be the mantra of the Democrats. Now it's print and spend. Write it down. I coined it just now for you. They say that borrow, borrow, borrow like there's no tomorrow because it's Obama and Hoyer and Reid and Pelosi. You know that gang. They run up a bill and then they apply for a credit card without any credit. You think you could get a credit card if you were bankrupt? No, but if you were Nancy Pelosi, you'd print the credit card. You get it? So it's print and spend. Michael Savage said it tonight. Print and spend. You'll hear it tomorrow on Rush's show. You know, I came up with a phrase years ago called compassionate conservative. Bush stole it. You say, oh, come on, you didn't create it. Yes, I did. The years I ran compassionate conservative conventions, the Bushies stole it, then they wouldn't even talk to me. I tried to save McCain in the last debate. I said, use this tonight, John. Use it. Trickle up poverty, John. Remember I created that phrase? I coined it. And I said, all you got to do is get up there tonight, John. And when Obama gives the soft shoe and the double talk and the I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, all you got to do is smile Reagan-like and say, you know, Senator, we've heard all of that before, and I know what it's called. It's called trickle-up poverty. That would have been the end of Obama. We would have had McCain. I don't know that it would have been much different, frankly, because Bush bankrupted the country with $1 trillion in debt, primarily contracting jobs for the endless war in Iraq. And so Obama came along saying he'd clean up the mess, and he ran it up to a $3 trillion debt. That's how you solve a problem if you're a Democrat, a liberal who never worked for a living. You know, 25 years ago, there was a debt ceiling fight. A debt ceiling fight that led to the historic Graham Rudman Act that required balanced budgets. You hear this? And Obama said he'd have a balanced budget, and you people don't understand what he's doing to you with Nancy Pelosi. I mean, go watch The Sopranos. You'll know what they're doing. They took over the sporting goods store, and they're selling out all of the sporting goods, and they're running up credit on the credit cards in the store, taking first-class flights, and the store is emptying out, and they're moving the barriers forward to make you think there's still goods left in the store. It's astounding to me how they get away with it. How? With their friends in the newspaper business, how do they get away with it? So, what do you want me to do about it? You think I can change anything? I can't. I cannot change it. Sure, throw them out in 2010. A lot of good it'll do you. By then, it'll be too late. If you threw every Democrat out, which you should do, so you'll get the Republicans who'll swear that they're altar boys. Wait, they're all cleaning up their act. They got halos now, the Republicans. The very same people who gave us Bush and $1 trillion in debt, suddenly they're polishing their halos. They're all altar boys and they're deacons in the church, and they're going to come out, elect us, your balanced budget, smaller government. The same old nonsense that you heard coming out of the mouth of Newt Gingrich for years. And what are you going to get? You're going to get the same you-know-what. You're going to get the same you-know-what. Yeah, that's why I'm an independent conservative. That's why I'm a heretic amongst heretics, as the New Yorker said about me. A party of one, and proud of it. I'm not a Republican. I'm a party of one. One man's opinion. You don't like it, don't listen to the show. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Any topic is fair game as long as it's one I'm talking about. Let's not talk about the economy, though, because that's such a bore, it's a nightmare. How about religious experiences? The latest study says that more Democrats than Republicans see ghosts, consult fortune tellers, and have religious experiences. How about you? Indiana Sean, when we come back, he said he had a religious experience in Iraq. I've never had a religious experience other than when I was born. My greatest religious experience was when I was born. I'm telling you the truth. That was my biggest religious experience to date. That was a religious experience. And you try to think of the next one. First love, first drunk, first dog, first tooth. Well, we'll let it go at that. 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back.
Savage.
My love must be a kind of blind love. I can't see anyone but you.
It is the Savage Nation. I only have eyes for you, my audience. 1-800-449-8255. I love this song. I Shabub, Shabub. So many memories come flowing back in my head, but I don't want to bore you with them. Many of you love the memory lane stuff, but you know, I'm 26 minutes to Powhana time, man. I can't wait. Long day's journey in tonight for me. Here's an email. You know, I asked you, how's my driving? I've been off for a week with the tooth, with the dental stuff, with the bone, with the collagen, with the this, with the that. And a colleague in the business, who I will not mention, who emails me from time to time, never met her, wrote me. She just said, Michael, you sound wonderful, uncharacteristically mellow but incisive. Thank you, LM. You sound wonderful. Uncharacteristically, that's a tough word to spell, by the way. You need spell check for that one. Uncharacteristic, Allie, mellow but incisive. Yeah, I'm a mellow guy. I'm just a mellow guy. I'm just a mellow, mellow guy. I can be. Frankly, I'm a mellow guy. People leave me alone. You see what I mean? If you leave a guy alone, he could be a very nice guy. But if you don't leave a guy alone, he gets angry. Just leave me alone. You know what I mean? Leave me alone. That's how I see it. You want to talk about the ultimate individual in this country? Leave me alone. But the government won't leave you alone. The government's bankrupting you. The government's controlling you from cradle to grave. The government's telling you what you can say. The government's telling you what you can't say. The government's telling you what you got to believe in, even though you know it's bull. Global warming. They're freezing to death across the Midwest. They can't get out of their houses in Canada. And they're supposed to believe because he says so. Because the con man in chief tells you it's warming. You're supposed to believe it. War is peace. He goes to war, and it's a good war because it has a D next to its name. All you peacenik, liar, hypocrite, bums you. You double talk. War is peace. Warming is cooling. Bankruptcy is solvency, and weakness is strength. We're living in a dictatorship. A dictatorship that most people refuse to recognize because they mindlessly repeat the mantras of the established administration. The government says there's global warming. They say there's global warming, even if they're freezing. If Obama says that war is good, then it's a good war, even if it was a bad war when Bush did it. If Obama got a Nobel Prize, then he must deserve it. You see? You're living through intellectual tyranny. Learn how to think for yourself, which is almost impossible. Most people in America have not been taught to think at all. They've been taught not to think. They've been taught to experience groupthink. It's us older people who understand what it is to think. We were taught to think. You were taught to follow. We're the leaders. If you had any idea, if you had any idea the danger you're in, you'd probably fall apart. Indiana, Sean, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Michael, I wanted to call and let you know what my definition of a religious experience was. I served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and when I was in Iraq, I was on a patrol where I was standing above in my vehicle with my waist exposed, and a roadside bomb or an IED detonated on my vehicle. There was nothing between me and the bomb at the time, but the blast knocked me out, but I was able to walk away from it without any cuts, without any, you know, with nothing wrong with me, even though the vehicle was looked like Swiss cheese. So,
who was anyone else injured or killed in that vehicle?
I had a few soldiers who were injured. Some shrapnel in the neck.
And Sean, what do you ascribe this experience to? Why do you think you were spared?
I firmly believe that it's because I had my friends and family were praying for my safety and my safe return.
Well, no one's going to argue with your experience. So all I can say is God bless you for serving America. Without men like you, we'd all be slaves. Thank you very much for listening to the Savage Nation. Kansas City, Mo. James, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Savage, I just you gave me a wonderful Christmas gift this evening. I have kind of had a distance with my being a Christian, and I've struggled for a few years, and I've kept it very secret and private, and struggled a great deal. And you talked about finding that oil and digging down and letting that be relit, and I just can't say thank you enough. I'm in the car driving home from work, and it was the best Christmas gift I think I could ever receive.
That's right, because you reached down and found the holy oil and you ignited it. and you're alive again.
I feel wonderful. And
but that's the point. We're just vessels. No matter how mechanistic many of us think we are, just machines, then we're no different than a bug. See, I don't buy that. I believe we have a divine soul and a divine spirit. And I believe that when the spirit is killed, we become either a Democrat or a lawyer or a Hollywood agent, one of the above. But the fact of the matter is, within all of us, there is holy oil, and it can be ignited, and we can become a full human again. But that requires going to God, who is the match. God is the match that ignites the oil. You can't do it on your own, James.
No, and I think I have been under the illusion with the culture and society that we live in that I could, and I forgot that he is in control, and ultimately, as you were speaking of, when we pray, we are worshiping and falling down to him. And we
that's
are
right.
Selfish.
See, that's the one thing that people don't understand in the modern world, because we're all so egotistical, which is, why should I worship somebody I can't see? What does that mean to me? They don't understand that prayer is not about you. It's about worshiping God. You have to show God that you're humble before him before he will do anything for you. I don't think that's taught to enough people, that the act of prayer is not actually for you. It's for God. Or I heard it another way, which is, it's not for God because he's almighty. He doesn't need any prayer. The act of prayer is for you, not for God. I mean, there's two ways to look at it, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I have been under an illusion from this culture and this society, and I stepped away from it. And I just want to say Merry Christmas and thank you for the gift that you gave me tonight.
That's sufficient. And I thank you, and Merry Christmas to you. And if you don't like the words Merry Christmas, go move to Iran. All of you out there don't like it. Write the FCC that I said Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. Move to Iran if you don't like it. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. What else do we have in the... We have a nice sound piece for you here, which is a comparison between Obama's speech about Afghanistan versus FDR's speech in clip 20. Listen to this.
We will seek a partnership with Afghanistan grounded in mutual respect, to isolate those who destroy, to strengthen those who build, to hasten the day when our troops will leave, and to forge a lasting friendship.
No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory.
Our overarching goal remains the same: to disrupt, dismantle, and defeat Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan and Pakistan, and to prevent its capacity to threaten America and our allies in the future.
I believe that I interpret the will of the Congress and of the people when I assert that we will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but will make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us.
America will have to show our strength in the way that we end wars and prevent conflict, not just how we wage wars. And we can't count on military might alone. We have to invest in our homeland security, because we can't capture or kill every violent extremist abroad.
Hostilities exist. There is no blinking at the fact that our people, our territory, and our interests are in grave danger. With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph. So help us God.
Well, Obama, you know, not one word of victory, not one word about the enemy, not one word about killing the enemy, not one word about anything to do with vanquishing the enemy, everything about parsing words like the college teacher he was, like college teachers abroad. Victorville, California. Mike, you're up on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hi, Michael. I'm an atheist, and I wanted to agree with you about in this country.
That's an interesting statement that you just made. Why would an atheist such as yourself agree with me that only an evangelical Christian revival can save America?
lot of the anecdotes that you share on your show touch on Bible verses. Just an example, last week or the week before, you were talking about everything is vanity. I do believe the teachings of the Bible. I just don't believe in God. I think...
Well, look, first of all, I'm not here to convert anyone. I'm not here to convince anyone because it's not my job to do so. I know what went on in my life, and I know what I had to do to tap into the whole power of the Almighty to literally touch it. You know, different religions and different religions call it a different thing. Let's move out of religion for a minute. Take a martial artist. They train not just with their bodies, but primarily with their spirits. That's true about any fighter. You know that, don't you, Mike?
Absolutely.
Now, you've watched martial artists draw air in. You've seen them draw strength in by doing certain maneuvers. What they're doing is drawing in a powerful spirit, the energy, the spirit of the universe, and they're pulling it into their body in order to project it out to their enemy or to the object that they're trying to destroy. Is that right or not right? I know that that's true. In other words, it was just the body that was fighting. They wouldn't win. And the martial artist trained to strengthen their spirit as much as their body. Now, therefore, they're tapping into a higher power. And religion is the same kind of thing for the non-martial person, for the non-fighter. You're tapping into the powerful spirit that put everything here. And different religions have different ways of approaching that spirit. And they call it different things. The Asians call it one thing. The Christians call it another. The Jews call it another. The Muslims call it another. The Hindus call it another. But fundamentally, the Great Spirit. Look at the American Indian lore. They knew there was a Great Spirit. What was it? Who knows what it was? Well, we call it God. And so you as an atheist, what do you do for your energy and power?
I don't know. I just try to center myself around my family, I guess. And
that's a very good place to be, Mike, because there's no greater place to be. And look, the family is the brick of society. And that's the reason that I don't know how to say it other than I hate to use the word, and I won't, because it'll come off wrong. The reason the family is under siege is because the communists understand that the nuclear family is the brick of society. If they can break that brick, which they've done a pretty good job of, the society crumbles and they can rebuild it with the new man. The new man is the Marxist man, the man who worships the state, not God. That's exactly what's been going on in this country since World War II, Mike. Make no mistake about it. They have gone after the family tooth and claw, understanding that when they break the family through divorce, through adultery, through perversion, through drugs, through alcohol, you name it, by destroying the brick of society, they can destroy society and remake that society in their own image. And in that image, we have seen before in the ex-Soviet Union, the image where the state is God, where there is no God. As Karl Marx said, religion is the opiate of the masses. And what did he replace religion with? He replaced it with a all-encompassing government bureaucracy that became a god unto itself, demigods, monsters, bureaucrats. Is that not what we have in America today?
That's global warming in a nutshell.
Well, there you go. Worship global warming. Worship Gaia. Worship the environment. Get down on your hands and knees, even though you know it's false. Worship this false god of environmentalism. And we'll lead you astray, not into the way. Mike, thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255. I'll take calls from anywhere in America, except for Miami Beach, where Legionaria is rampant. I'll be right back.
Savage. My love must be a kind of blind love. I can't see anyone but you.
It is the Savage Nation, a little authentic rock and roll. I only have eyes for me. A little slow for this day and age, I admit, but it's a beautiful song. Used to listen to this while doing submarine watching on Belt Parkway. Never saw one. We sat there for hours, night after night, every weekend, but we never saw the submarine. We're all looking for it. I was on speaking of the submarine yesterday, I was out on my boat on the Intracoastal in Florida. And a horrible, horrible experience. Horrible. Just filled with morons and speedboats. Got a speed buyer. Guido and Guidette going by. Unbelievable. I never saw anything like it. Stupid people of the lowest order. They got to vote Zoom. They got to cut everyone off and make a wake and make your boat rock to feel like a man. Reminds me of the movie Dillinger. Another, a real man shoots the other man. A real man speeds by and knocks everyone around on their boat. You schmuck. Putz. He's not an experience I want to repeat the next time I go out to sea. I go out one of the inlets and get out to the ocean. That's all. Get away from people. I got to tell you, you watch a flock of whatever you want to call it, of pelicans flying over a beach. If you want to talk about a religious experience, you know, it's why I'm so into animals, because the animals bring us closer to nature, and nature brings us closer to God. It's very difficult with people, unless you're a kid. So the point is, you watch a flock of pelicans flying by overhead, and if you don't see the miracle of that, you see everything in that one vision of a thing, the pelicans going by. You see evolution from the pterodactyl to the pelican. You see beauty. You see order. You see harmony. You see a symphony. You see beauty. You see compassion. You see survival. You see wisdom. You see everything, weakness and strength. How do you get through things? How do you get through difficult things? Well, Vietnam veteran said, I said, how did you get through the prison camp? How did you get through the prison camp? How did you live through the tortures of the Vietnamese who broke your bones and tried to break your spirit? And you know what he said? Empty that which is full and fill that which is empty. I didn't quite know what that meant. Empty that which is full and fill that which is empty. What did he mean by that? Well, let's start with empty that which is full. He was full of hate for the Vietnamese torturers. And he knew that if the hate continued, he would have died. If he had any more hatred for them, he would have died. So he had to empty that which is full. And what did he have to fill? That which was empty. What was empty? The spirit was empty. Love was empty. He had to learn to love in order to survive. I heard that from Holocaust survivors, too, in the death camps, those who wrote about it. There were some great books on how do you survive in a Nazi concentration camp when you see the worst horrors imaginable. How do you survive with such horror around you? I remember, I forget who wrote this. It was one of the great psychiatrists. He eventually killed himself years after he survived the death camps. I forget his name. It'll come back to me another time. But he wrote that he learned to stop hating the Nazi guards, because if he continued to hate them, he would have died. He would have imploded from hatred. He didn't exactly learn to love the guards, but he learned to accept them. And once he learned to stop hating and to accept them, he was able to survive the death camps of Nazi Germany. Now, I don't remember. Who was the psychiatrist who wrote that? Does anyone know? It's on the tip of my tongue. I need the exact right name. And I'll get it. Someone listening to this show knows the answer to that. Whoever gets it right wins a free copy of Band in Britain. Band in Britain, going like crazy for the Christmas holiday. It's amazing, okay? Empty that which is full, fill that which is empty. I don't know. We're getting into the different things. We're around a spiritual time right now. Hanukkah, Christmas, a very powerful time of year for the Judeo-Christian universe. This is when the spirit starts to come into people. Some express it through the shopping and giving, but it brings out the best in people in a way. And we also are open right now. You see, the Western world is actually right now open for some kind of messianic thing to happen to them. The Western world is open right now for a spiritual revival. Pardon me for waxing about it, but I know it's true. This is a time of year, and this is a time in America's life where unless the spirit enters you, and you understand we're in the grips right now of Marxist atheists, it's all over. We have a chance right now. Obama's ratings are in the toilet. The more you've seen of him, the more you know he's a phony. The more you've seen a Pelosi sporting goods store, etc. Goodbye.
Savage. Visit TRNCentral.com, your one stop for news and all things talk radio. That's TRNCentral.com.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The newspaper roundup for today, Denver Post. CUA's using timers to control dorm showers. Wow, how green. Denver Post. Homeowners group plans to sue city over plans to close library. From the Washington Times. GOP hopes rise for Obama and the Biden Senate seats, meaning that they're going to get thrown out. Washington Times. Powerful lawmakers clash over $3 billion Army contract. USA Today. As demand rises, states furlough workers who process unemployment and disability benefits. Palm Beach Post, Kansas hate group to protest against Jews in Palm Beach County today and tomorrow. That's unbelievable. Politico, Senate delegation to skip Copenhagen, but Kerry might go anyway. On a broomstick. Washington Post, sex bias probe in colleges selections. Panel to study whether men are favored in area schools admissions. Are they crazy? There's not enough women in college who outnumber men? Are they insane?
It's almost 2-1 these days.
Washington Post, U.S. unveils plan to rev up clean technology in poor nations. Nations pledge funds to make renewable energy more accessible. This is the biggest scam in the world, renewable energy. Washington Post, hardline Pakistani schools a draw for foreigners, meaning schools that teach to kill and hate.
Madrasas.
L.A. Times, judge backs students' First Amendment rights and says cruel remarks online are not unconstitutional. Well, gee, thank you, judge. Wash Post, vote moves D.C. closer to medical marijuana. Boston Globe, Frank gets delay in law restricting net casinos. You see that Barney Frank wants more net casinos because Barney Frank favors legal online betting because he's such a good guy. He's always good. Liberals are always good.
He makes out okay from the Wall Street casinos, too.
USA Today, households take up challenge to be chilly, whatever that means. Citigroup to repay $20 billion in bailout money. Wash Post, Obama sees Senate socialized medicine health care passage by December 25.
Nice Christmas present for Chairman O.
And here's a good one for those of you who love Fox News and the New York Post. We all love them. The call girl linked to ex-New York Governor Elliot Spitzer has been hired by the New York Post Murdoch Company to write a sex column. I guess he knows one thing, that sex sells. And truth can be going to you know where.
Let them eat cheesecake.
I watched a movie called Public Enemies. I thought it was so bad, I couldn't stop watching it to see if it could get worse, and it did. And then I couldn't stop watching it, wondering when it would end. It was one of the worst. It was, you know, I had dental work last week, really bad dental surgery. I wouldn't say this was as close to it as you can come filmically, but it was close. And here are some reviews of Public Enemies that I agree with. Jeffrey Chen, window to the movie, says, feels like experimental filmmaking and never seems to transcend that to something more profound or awe-inspiring. Andy Klein, Brand X, says, Mann and his writers recount Dillinger's story clearly and with more historical accuracy than some of the earlier film versions, but you're left wondering, so what? You can put together all the elements that should create gold, and yet without that charm, mysterious sprinkle of cinematic pixie dust, the alchemy fails to work. You are right. Cole Smithy, says, by the time director Michael Mann gets around to making clear his intention of creating a throwback to Hollywood gangster films of the 30s, Public Enemies has long since worn out its welcome. Oh, yes, amen. Alonso Duralt of MSNBC says, even as a valentine to gangster movies, Public Enemies leaves you wishing that you, like Dillinger on the last night of his life, were watching Manhattan melodrama instead. David Nusser, Real Film Review, says, Mann's head-scratching use of bottom-of-the-barrel HD cameras ensures that each and every shot looks as though it were filmed in somebody's backyard. Christopher Tukey of the Daily Mail says Mann dedicates himself to making Dillinger look cool, and that's the problem with the whole movie. It looks the business, but has no depth, nothing to say, no new angle. It just feels like a homage to older, better films. The world, according to Obama, war is peace, warming is cooling, bankruptcy is solvency, and weakness is strength. Obama accepted the Nobel Dynamite Prize last week. Now, that's a prize even liberals don't think he deserves. A prize made all the more ironic by the fact that he just announced he was sending 30,000 troops, more troops, into Afghanistan. You know why? Because according to Obama, war is peace. And this week, Obama goes to Copenhagen and the climate summit. We'll try to commit America to socialism in the name of global warming. That's in the middle of the coldest winter in decades. He will ignore the countless scientists and scientific evidence which refutes human-caused global warming as an unprecedented blizzard sweeps across the Midwest. You know why? Because according to Obama, warming is cooling. And according to Obama, ignorance is strength, because if you ignore the facts on climate change, if you ignore the fact that he's getting us into an endless war in Afghanistan, and if you ignore the fact that he doesn't deserve the Nobel Prize or the presidency, then according to Obama, that's strength. But that's not strength, that's doublespeak from 1984. In Orwell's book 1984, the three slogans of the dictatorship are war is peace, freedom is slavery, and ignorance is strength. The slogans of today's dictatorship are almost the same. War is peace, warming is cooling, weakness is strength, and bankruptcy is solvency. We are in a dictatorship. A dictatorship most people refuse to recognize because they mindlessly repeat the mantras of the establishment. If the government says there's global warming, there must be global warming. If Obama says that war is good, then it must be a good war, even if it was bad when Bush did it. If Obama got a Nobel Prize, then he must deserve it. In order to be a real nation again, I want to remind you, America must engage in thought crime, throw off the chains of intellectual tyranny, and you must reject the orthodoxy of the Obama administration. Those are the headlines for the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Here's James Hurston with a report on the shenanigans going on in Hollywood.
Sacha Baron Cohen, the satirist behind the mockumentaries Borat and Bruno, just can't seem to stay out of courtrooms. He's been sued several times over scenes in Borat, but now he is a defendant in a lawsuit over Bruno that has geopolitical dimensions. Ayman Abu Aida, a Palestinian shopkeeper, appears in Bruno portrayed as a terrorist. Abu Aida filed a lawsuit in the D.C. federal court against Sacha Baron Cohen, David Letterman's production company, CBS, NBC Universal, and others for libel and slander. He's asking for $110 million.
Unbelievable.
Now, Bruno had a storyline centered on Cohen's portrayal of a gay Austrian fashion journalist who is seeking fame in America. Bruno travels to the Middle East to make peace, thinking that it will make him a celebrity. He interviews Abu Aida while a caption labels the guy a member of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, as you know, an infamous terrorist group. According to the civil complaint, Abu Aida is really a prominent businessman, a Christian, and a peace-loving person who abhors violence. He claims, as is a must in a case like this, that prior to the release of Bruno, he had a good reputation for honesty and a peaceable nature in his community. An essential part of all defamation claims, the papers allege that Abu Aida was never, ever associated with the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade or any other terrorist activity. If his claims are true, this guy, Abu Aida, has been labeled and lumped together with heinous terrorists, causing damage to his reputation in his business and community. Sound familiar?
This is unbelievable to me. It's insane.
The distributor of the movie, NBC Universal, and the director, Larry Charles, are named as defendants in the lawsuit. Abu Aida also added CBS and Letterman's company Worldwide Pants because, during an interview before the film was released, Letterman had Cohen on the show to plug Bruno. And Cohen talked about the scene where his character encounters a terrorist. Cohen told Letterman he had set up the meeting in the West Bank with the help of a CIA agent. Cohen also said that he was really scared for his safety. He claimed to have interviewed the terrorist at a secret location that was chosen by Abu Aida. A clip of the scene was then shown to the TV audience. Well, the lawsuit contradicts Cohen's late-night discussion. According to the court papers, the interview with Abu Aida took place at a hotel that was picked by Cohen and was located in a part of the West Bank under Israeli military control. Both Israelis and Palestinians were unhappy in the way they were portrayed in Bruno, and in a place Bruno referred to as, quote, Middle Earth, close quote. He meant the Middle East, of course. Cohen also used his character in the film to set up Congressman Ron Paul. In one scene, Cohen, as Bruno, interviewed Paul, who in the scene is obviously not aware this is a comedic ambush. The interview turned into an attempted seduction of the congressman by Cohen's character, and when Bruno dropped his pants, Paul understandably stormed out. Cohen also faced a gaggle of lawsuits after his previous film, Barat. The most prominent suit came from the residents of a remote Romanian village who said they were misled into thinking the project was a documentary about poverty. And those town folks asked for $30 million. Now, many of those lawsuits were thrown out of court. Now, normally, those that appear in film footage sign a release form, a contract of sorts, that to a great extent absolves the filmmakers of liability. A pivotal question in this case is whether Abu Aida signed such a release. His lawyers say he did not. In addition to claiming a damage to reputation, his lawyers will portray this as a freedom of expression case. They will argue the point that not all Palestinians who are political activists are terrorists. Abu Aida's attorney has also said that the gay associations in the movie could cause danger for the Palestinian. The first court hearing on the Abu Aida suit could come in late January. Let's watch this case carefully and see if he gets his $110 million. Thanks, Michael. Putting up with stranger events than what Sacha Baron Cohen could ever make up. Back to you, my friend.
Hey, thanks for the report, James. I've been watching with utter amazement and admiration the World War II series on History Channel. I've never seen anything like this. The color pictures that they got from Army archives, from family members, from nurses. Now, I've watched an awful lot of this over the last 20 or 30 years. I've never seen anything on this level. In that, the men who are dying, fighting and dying in these pictures look like the kid next door or your son. And your heart's ripped out when you see them ripped to shreds. 23,000 died taking Iwo Jima. 23,000 men died taking Iwo Jima in the most horrible deaths imaginable. And you see the commanders, and you ask yourself, what if these Gates and Mullen were in charge of World War II? Well, you'd be speaking German. They'd be afraid of offending Germans. Someone would say, but wait a minute, the man screamed Heil Hitler before he opened up at Fort Hood. Should we draw any conclusions from that? And Admiral Mullen would say, now, don't jump to any conclusions that he was a Nazi. And our hearts go out to all Germans serving in the military. What the hell is he talking about? I had mentioned to you that the Japanese Americans, who had every reason to hate America because their families had been interned, didn't hate America. Maybe they resented what was done to their families. But to prove their loyalty beyond a reasonable doubt, despite the fact that their mothers and fathers may have been interned, taken from their businesses and homes and put into concentration camps here, internment camps, whatever. They didn't turn on America. They didn't open fire at a military base. The Japanese Americans, to their eternal credit, said, I am going to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that I am a loyal American. And so the military created the 442nd for them to prove it. And I want to remind you, which I said before this series, because I happen to know some members, family members, people whose family were members of the 442nd. They are the most highly decorated unit, brigade, I don't know the exact description, in the history of the U.S. military. Why? Because to prove that they were loyal, more loyal than the average American, they did the most daring things imaginable in World War II, amongst the most daring. many of them got chopped to ribbons, died, whatever. And many of them, and they fought alongside, it said, in their own units. And they fought in Italy. They fought in France. Many of them were interpreters in the islands, going through the islands, whether it was Saipan or Iwo Jima, when they were telling the remnants of the Japanese military come out of the caves as they were burning them out with flamethrowers. What would Mullen say if they had to take Iwo Jima now, Mount Kiribati, and there were holdouts inside the tunnels? Don't use flamethrowers. Consult the UN. Well, then we wouldn't have had a landing base on Iwo Jima for the B-29s. We wouldn't have had a landing base for the support fighter jets, to fighter planes to support the B-29s. We wouldn't have been able to take Japan down. Maybe we'd still be fighting World War II. And now you look at what's the sad sacks running the military, the schmucks running the government. They bring Khalid Sheikh Mohammed to New York to try him when you know and I know it's a political stunt by Obama and his left-wing fanatics. Even the socialist president FDR agreed with the Supreme Court that the Nazi saboteurs who were caught should be tried in a military tribunal. They were tried, and six of them were hung. They were hung in World War II, and that was under Franklin Delano Roosevelt, a socialist president here in America. And yet these people, these radical communists running America today have the nerve to say that that's who we are. We give people a trial. You know, when I hear Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, I think of a certain item that was used by boys in college that's no longer sold. That's what I think of the word itself. I don't believe that the man deserves a civilian trial.
Savage.
We all see Obama making the rounds saying the newest labor reports prove his stimulus plan is working and the recession is turning around. Well, I'm not so sure that that's the case. I believe that the rich got richer and the poor got poorer. For another opinion, we have James Shirk from the Heritage Foundation.
Thanks, Michael. The jobs report had provided, for once, a dash of optimistic news. Unemployment was down from 10.2% to 10%, and only 11,000 jobs were lost. And even better news, the job losses that we had last month, which were initially reported at 190,000, were dropped down to 110,000. So it looks like the labor market, cross your fingers, is finally starting to slow its decline, and will hopefully bottom out sometime within the next few months. That said, though, it's still way too early to celebrate. You're hearing some people, like the Center for American Progress, are saying this proves the stimulus is working. Well, aside from 11,000 jobs being lost, not proving the stimulus isn't working, or not proving that that it's worked, we've still got unemployment at 10%. This is still the highest unemployment that we've had since the early 1980s. Millions of American workers are out of work. And the downside in the jobs report, I mean, there's plenty of good news there. This is a reason to be cautiously optimistic. Hours of work for employees increased slightly, so it looks like first, employers start having their employees work longer hours and give them longer schedules. Then they start hiring once they've done that. So when you see hours starting to creep up, that's a good sign. It means that employers want their workers working more. We saw job growth in temporary help services. Well, you might be wondering, well, I don't want to do a temporary help job. What good does that do me? Well, what it means is that employers usually, before they start hiring again anyone full-time, anyone permanently, will turn to temporary help services. They don't want to make the commitment of hiring someone for a full-time job, so they do the short-term thing. But then as that keeps going, and if the business and their demand keeps picking up, then they'll hire more full-time people. And so the fact that we're seeing hours increase, the fact that we're seeing a temporary help increase for another month, and this has been going for the past several months, is a good sign. And we can cross our fingers and hope that the labor force is bottoming out.
Well, these are somewhat positive signs. Did you see anything that worried you?
The number of Americans working in the labor force dropped by another 100,000. A lot of Americans just gave up on looking for work. And that was part of why the unemployment rate dropped the full 0.2 percentage point. And among those were teenagers. Now, teenagers tend to have higher unemployment rates. Surprise, surprise. They don't have very many skills. And so when you have large numbers of teenagers dropping out of the labor force, well, that's going to be part of the reason unemployment goes down. So it's not quite as good a sign as you would think just from looking at it. More discouraging news was the fact that those who are unemployed are still staying unemployed for a long period of time. The average length of time that an American is out of work, the average length of time someone is unemployed, is now over 28 weeks. That's over 6 months. And that was up about a week and a half from the previous month's report. Another 300,000 Americans are now out of work for 6 months or longer than were in October. So while there's some good signs, the problem, the challenge is that we're not seeing the job creation. And that has been the overwhelming problem in the downturn. You turn on the television, you listen to the radio, and you hear about factories closing, you hear about mass layoffs, and you think that unemployment is mostly going up because companies are laying workers off left, right, and center. That's not exactly true. There is truth in that. We have seen layoffs gone up. Job losses at companies have gone up by about 15% since the recession began. But that has not been the main reason unemployment has gone up.
Why has it?
What's happened is that job creation, new jobs being created, has gone down by 25%. That's the much larger reason that unemployment is going up, is that new jobs are not being created. It's the dog that isn't barking. We are not seeing the same level of entrepreneurial activity. Potential entrepreneurs are deciding, you know what, I'm not going to invest and expand my business right now. Potential people who could go out and start up their own small business are deciding, you know what, I'm not going to do that right now. And we're going to continue to have this high unemployment. We're going to have a very long, slow jobless recovery as long as that's the case. As long as entrepreneurs are sitting on the sidelines and not investing in new businesses and not creating new jobs, we're going to continue to have millions and millions of Americans unemployed, and it's going to be a serious problem in the country.
But why aren't entrepreneurs creating new businesses under Obama?
Part of the problem has been, obviously, a recession. People are very unsure about the business environment, so they're hunkering down. They're laying off the workers they need to lay off. They're not thinking about expanding their business, and they're just trying to survive. That's very natural. But there's a few other factors that have been added in this recession. You've got a credit crunch. The banking industry has taken an enormous hit. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to rebuild their balance sheets because of the billions and billions they've lost. They want to loan to the least risky people possible right now. They don't want to take on any more risk. Well, the problem is new businesses, small businesses, are pretty risky loans. And so what the banks would like to do is make safe loans, like to the federal government. Well, with Washington running these trillion-dollar deficits, it turns out that now the federal government is borrowing almost all the aggregate funds that are being loaned in net in the economy. The total amount of borrowing going on in the economy is almost entirely accounted for by the federal budget deficit right now. So what the investors are doing right now is loaning to the government, borrowing to the government, instead of to a more risky entrepreneur. And it makes sense from their point. They want to minimize risk. But from the point of getting the economy going, getting investment going again, it's not helpful. We need those entrepreneurs out there starting up new businesses, starting new jobs. And they don't have the funding right now. People aren't making those investments. On top of that, you've got the enormous political risk coming out of Washington. This healthcare bill is bad for many, many reasons, but it's also bad for you if you're an employer. You're going to make healthcare more expensive, require employers to provide it, and raise taxes on employers and on small businesses. What's that do to your likelihood of your business succeeding?
Well, this gives us a worse chance for businesses to succeed.
Of course it makes it worse. Take a look at this cap and trade. We're going to make energy enormously expensive if we pass this bill. What's that do to the prospects of a new business or any sort of business that needs much energy? Card check. We're going to get rid of the secret ballot if this bill passes so that unions can basically pressure workers who don't want to into joining a union. Then we'll have the government come in and impose a contract on a business. What do you think unions do to the likelihood of a business surviving? Well, look at Detroit. We know it's not good. What do you think having the government write your business plan for the next 2 years, an outside arbitrator, a lawyer who doesn't know your business, has no expertise, what's that do to your odds of your business surviving? So almost everything that Washington is considering is bad for business. The Obama agenda is bad for business success. So what does a rational, logical entrepreneur sitting down do? I have no idea what my business odds of succeeding are. I know what my odds are in the current environment with the current laws. I don't know what they'll be in 2 years if Obama passes all this stuff. So you wait and see. You wait and see if taxes go up, if this healthcare bill gets passed, and how bad it is, if you get the card check, if we get the cap and trade. And so entrepreneurs are trying to protect their wealth. They don't want to put it all into a business just to have Obama redistribute it away. They don't like taxes any more than anyone else. So the combination of the recession, the credit crunch, and this policy environment has made this a toxic environment for new business startups and for entrepreneurs. Investment spending by business has fallen by a fifth, and with that investment spending has fallen new hires and job creation. The solution, of course, would be to stop pushing an agenda that's so hostile to job creation, that's hostile to entrepreneurs, that's hostile to those who have a business idea and want to put it in effect and don't want the government getting in the way. That hasn't been the Obama administration's approach. Take a look at the job summit yesterday. In that job summit, the job summit they had on Thursday, guess who wasn't invited? The Chamber of Commerce, the National Federation of Independent Businesses. The people who represent job creators were not invited, probably because the White House didn't want to hear what they have to say. Their focus has been on government. Look at the stimulus bill. What is it but enormous increases in government spending? But all that new government spending does nothing to encourage you, if you're an entrepreneur, to start a new business. It doesn't address the real problem. Government spending does not make your business more likely to succeed unless you're getting money from the government. And most entrepreneurs aren't. So the entire Obama approach, the White House approach, has ignored the main problem, has ignored the lack of entrepreneurship, has ignored the problem of insufficient job creation in favor of having Washington do it all. Well, it fits with a political agenda, but it's not going to get us out of the recession. And what we're probably looking at is high unemployment for quite an extended period of time, and some job growth, but not enough to reduce unemployment and a long, extended, painful, jobless recovery.
James Shirk, thanks for the report.
Thank you, Michael.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
There goes Obama to the climate summit. And guess who else is there? None other than the man who broke the Bank of England, or almost there, George Soros, the money trader. Listen to how he wants to impose green socialism on the world under the guise of environmentalism.
This can be done by using idle resources, the money lying there unused. And there's two elements to it. One is the recent distribution of special drawing rights. The developed world received over $150 billion, and they really have no use for it at all. They have it in the shop window, but as decoration. And they would lend that to the IMF that would set up this green fund. And the interest and the principal would be guaranteed using the gold reserves of the IMF.
Did you hear that? Soros is saying he wants to redistribute the wealth for the world in order to direct it towards green causes. Really? And who benefits from that? He wants to change your gold to green, but wait, it gets worse.
I think there will be some resistance, and I think that it won't happen unless there is public pressure and demands from the developing world. To make it happen. And the main difficulty actually is that it would require congressional approval in the United States. And that's a cumbersome and painful process for the administration to go through it. And so they would probably prefer not to do it unless the political will can be generated.
Putting that together,
I think that the president would certainly favor it.
Oh, sure, there will be some resistance, but traditionally dictators have been able to overcome resistance with terror. And I'm sure they'll find an excuse when push comes to shove. And what does Al Gorleone have to say about the ClimateGate myth? About the emails that completely debunk his global warming lie?
What they've done is they've taken emails more than a decade old and picked out phrases and taken them out of context and misrepresented them. This is taking place in an era of unreality because all around the world, we're seeing the consequences of global warming.
What about the consequences of your myth, Al Gore? And he goes on.
Well, it's not unusual during these two-week international negotiations for there to be multiple texts that are floated. Sometimes they're leaked. I think it ought to be kept in perspective. From my point of view, the Danish government hosting this conference has done an extraordinary job to try to to ensure that the conference and the result turns out well. And I wouldn't put too much emphasis on a leaked text this early in the process. This is the most complex challenge that our global civilization has ever confronted. And there will be lots of efforts to try to get texts and versions of the text that all sides can agree to work from. Again, this is not unusual at this stage in a complex negotiation like this.
The most complex challenge? Worse than people who want to kill you, convert you, and destroy your culture, Al? He's insane. Almost as insane as Obama accepting the Nobel Prize. Listen to this.
I do not bring with me today a definitive solution to the problems of war. What I do know is that meeting these challenges will require the same vision, hard work, and persistence of those men and women who acted so boldly decades ago. And it will require us to think in new ways about the notions of just war and the imperatives of a just peace.
So in other words, war is peace, warming is cooling, bankruptcy is solvency, and weakness is strength. I see these people here in the San Francisco area. I see them and I shake my head in wonderment that they can get themselves up in the morning. And then I watch how they raise their children. I had a power lunch, for example. Maybe you went to a famous Friars Club or some power lunch in Manhattan or L.A. and you're laughing at me. Or maybe you went to Mar-a-Lago in Florida. I went to a taco chain. And I ate alone, and I said to myself, why do I do this to myself? I could eat in the most expensive restaurant in the world for lunch. Why am I alone in a commercial taco stand? The answer was because I'd rather be alone in a commercial taco stand than put up with people I can't tolerate. And I don't even like talking to people. I talk with you for a living. I don't like talking when I'm off the air. I think when I'm off the air. I watch TV, or I ride a bike, or I go on my boat, or whatever else I do, but I don't like talking when I'm off the air. So anyway, I'm on the line in the taco stand. It's not really a taco stand. It's like one of the upscales, you know, food takes time to make. And I'm fuming. Sure enough, my luck, there's a liberal woman, four people ahead of me. The Hispanics are very nice in there. I'm one of the people who always leaves them a tip. No one leaves tips in these places because I know what it was like to work for minimum wage, and I always leave a buck, big deal. And the people look at me like, thank you. And I said, that's cool. I once had this job, you know, because I still have the remembrance of things past. Woman liberal. How could you place a taco order and make it special? I see it in coffee shops. I want a special Mappuccino with low-fat milk, and the coffee should come from, the water should be from, and don't put in, don't, and blah, blah, blah. But in a taco stand? She's going on and on about it, and leave this out and put that in, and I want that on three side dishes. And she's got a child pulling at her. I said, oh, God, she's just a woman with a child. Don't even look at her. Stop it. Finally, I get to the stand. Order my thing. Finally, the thing comes minutes later, and I'm eating whatever I ordered. I think it's a three shrimp deal. Two shrimp tacos and beans and rice. For $6.99, the thing I like about it is they give you the chips right away, at least because I'm a compulsive eater. While I'm waiting, I got to eat. Whether it's a good restaurant or bad, I call in advance. I want something on the table. I'm not alone on this. If you're a famous person, which I'm not, but let's say you're a prince from Saudi Arabia, when you go to their house, they have food on the table for you. It's like very Arabic. It's Semitic to have food waiting for your guests. I mean, no derogatory anything meant here, but if I've gone to the home of a non-Semitic people, I've even gone to weddings of non-Semitic people, they make you wait 3 hours for an olive. If you want an olive, you got to order a martini at a non-Semitic house. I've never seen anything like this. Where I was raised, there was food on the table. If you invited people over, there had to be food all over the living room. Living room. They call it something else today. I don't know what they call it. It really was a living room, but my mother had 100 different dishes out in the house. And people ate while waiting for dinner. Anyway, the point is the reason I go to the taco stand is they give you chips, which are disgusting. But I like the sauces, and you can wait, and you look, and you observe life, and you say, oh, my God. Anyway, the woman who wanted the special taco goes over now and sits down after she gets her food, and I couldn't help but hearing the noise from her brats. Squirming, yelling, screaming. I mean, like from the Bronx in the 1950s. I didn't even know they made children like this anymore. In my day, the mother just would have slapped the child and said, shut up, or you're not going to eat, or we're leaving here. Stop it. She's catering to the child. And I think about it. I look at people with their 5 years old and their 4 year olds and their 3 year olds, and I see women who look reasonably intelligent, and I know that they're moronic. They say to a child, they talk to a child like an adult. They say, would you prefer a tofu burger today or a chicken sandwich? I see the child looks at them like they're crazy. What does a child at 3 years of age know? You're supposed to tell them what to have. You're not supposed to ask them what they want. Stop making children into your friend. Stop making children into your equal. Because you know what happens? You know who they grow up to be? They grow up to be liberal lawyers from NYU who think that the whole world owes them something. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Anyway, it's a long story, and I thought I would share it with you. Play some music for a minute. Wow. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.